Rolling for October 6, 2015. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hassenflow.
And we're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. And if you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. This week, hopefully you found more information by updating your Apple operating system. El Capitan has come out and it's available now. And I really do recommend that you upgrade all of your operating systems all the time. Don't ignore those upgrades. Those updates are really critical. Have you done yours, Chip?
I have not, but I have the warning there saying, hey, please do it now.
Yeah, you really need to. It is very vital to the ecosystem. It's good for all of us. You need to do those updates. I found it, first of all, I've been using El Capitan all summer.
Uh-huh.
I'm a beta tester. I like getting all of these things early. I've been using it all summer. It is great. It's ready for you. And I think the best thing is this new search. When you go up to the search in the operating system, you can search not only your computer, but the entire internet.
Well, it seems that Apple is taking the things that you enjoy about your iPhone or your tablet, your iPad, and they are bringing those to your operating system. Which is almost, different. We talked about this before.
Mm-hmm.
The Microsoft's approach, where they tend to take their operating system and then throw it through a phone or through a...
Microsoft is an operating system company, not a computer company. Apple is a computer company that happens to make an operating system.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Well, they'll be updated sometime this week.
Yep. Get to it. Get to it right now. Well, you know what? Stay here for an hour and listen to the show and then get to it.
There you go.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. And boy, we have been watching a lot of movies. The temperature must have changed outside.
We went from like nice, beautiful, warm weather to like frigid, cold fall.
Somebody threw the fall switch. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. So as the rest of the South ends up getting rained upon, we just got temperature drops.
Yep, that's how it works. You're on a tear with the Oscar-winning movies. You watched an Oscar-winning movie last week, and you watched another one this week. You caught Million Dollar Baby.
It's interesting. Netflix has their queue, and when you send back a disc, they send you a new disc. Not the streaming part. This is the disc part.
On plastic discs.
On plastic discs, which means you have to clean them now, because the number of skips, it's crazy. Anyway, Clint Eastwood's Million Dollar Baby came, and that's very interesting because that was the first time I had watched it. Clint Eastwood seems to be a person that I don't catch all of his films when he originally releases them, but when I do catch them, I go, wow, that was a really good film. So this is a 2004 film. And the interesting part about this film is that it's going to be streaming on Netflix in just a week.
Because it's 11 years old.
Oh, my goodness. Well, anyway, I enjoyed it. If you haven't watched it, I highly recommend it. It's a boxing film. Lots of boxing films are very good films.
Yeah, I've never watched this one. You're right. Boxing films do have a theme of being...
It must be the brutal nature of boxing
versus...
and the humanity it must bring out through it.
That's it.
Clint Eastwood is a manager of boxers, runs a gym, and a woman who is a Hilary Swank who comes in and wants to be trained as a boxer. He refuses. It talks a lot about the nature of boxing and sort of what happens in it. It's got a very touching ending. Highly recommend it if you haven't seen it. And because of my experience with that, Bird is next coming. I haven't seen Bird, which was a Clint Eastwood film too. It's about Charlie Parker.
I don't know that one.
Ah, there you go.
There you go. Maybe that's my film of the week next week. Meh, probably not. You also saw Godzilla. You saw Godzilla from last year, finally.
Well, the disc went back. They brought out Godzilla, and I caught it. Yeah, it was released in 2014. It really didn't hit me hard.
Really?
Nah.
I love those movies, man.
It definitely follows how the old ones went.
Mm-hmm.
Very old school.
It is a classic. It is a reboot. It's really fun.
I don't know if the story kind of hangs the way that I wanted it to. They try to update it a little bit, become a little more sophisticated. Really, this is about the scare in Japan after the bombs were dropped and the healing part, the part that comes from that. I don't know how well it resonates today, but you enjoyed it. And you said your kids loved it.
I loved it. We went to the movie theater to catch this one last year.
Okay.
And it was a cold, dreary day. And, you know, it's fall. And we sat and we loved this monster movie. I like all those classic monster movies.
Well, this is 2014. It certainly isn't the one from the 50s.
I know.
But I will say that I don't want to overthink this film. The goal of this film is to get Godzilla fighting a couple of monsters.
Exactly. This is not an Oscar-winning Clint Eastwood movie. It did have Bryan Cranston in it.
Okay.
So, okay. I would go out and watch
this
that one.
This reminds me of Independence Day, which is another film I didn't particularly enjoy.
Oh, I love Independence Day. See, we have very different tastes, that's for sure. I saw a few movies, too. I went to the movie theater and watched Hotel Transylvania 2 because I liked the first one so much. We went on opening weekend. Funny story, Hotel Transylvania 2 actually broke box office records for the month of September. They made more money on that movie than any other movie in the month of September ever.
Well, that's interesting. A few years ago, we started getting a whole bunch of Halloween movies. Monster House, Paranorman, and then Hotel Transylvania. So you can see, I mean, it's October right now. You can see that Halloween is picking up steam,
mm-hmm.
much like Christmas movies kind of pick up steam.
Yep.
You know, creating a whole genre of that.
And a lot of things that you have to buy as a result. I went out and got a box of Count Chocula after watching this movie because, yes, there is a Count Chocula joke in it that's hilarious. I also watched Cool as Ice, the 1991 Vanilla Ice movie.
Well, you can't get enough Vanilla Ice.
Yeah, I think I can. I think I can get enough Vanilla Ice. The reason why I watched this, I watched the Riff Trax edition. Riff Trax is the guys who used to do MST3K, and they do now
Mystery Science Theater 3000 for most people out there.
For the non-nerds. Okay, we got it. They are a group of people who sit and watch movies and make fun of them while they're watching it.
Yes.
They have very tightly scripted jokes that they're going to tell while they're watching this movie.
And they usually watch B movies.
And they're usually pretty bad movies, B for bad. And Cool as Ice is certainly one of those bad movies.
What? The Oscar?
Oh, my goodness. No, this was a bad movie. But it's fun to watch it with these three guys who
sure.
can give you some joy in this terrible movie.
Now, this was a Phantom Events, right?
This was not. The reason why I watched Cool as Ice is because the Riff Trax guys were doing a Phantom Events on
okay.
Thursday last week, and it's Thursday night, and it's $13 to go to the movie theater to watch a bad movie. I just have a hard time doing that. So instead, what we did was we rented this movie from rifftrax.com and paid $10 for the whole family to watch it instead of $13 a piece to watch some other bad movie.
Okay.
Now, I will watch the bad movie that they were doing on Thursday when it comes out at a streaming level. It's, we've talked about this.
Okay.
The audience that you are with to watch a movie changes the way you watch the movie.
In fact, that's a good point, because Mystery Science Theater can be watched by itself,
mm-hmm.
but if you were with a group of friends watching it, you're making jokes along the same time they're making those jokes.
In fact, the Chicago Meetup MST3K group is a really great way to watch those movies,
okay.
because they are a group of people who all like these bad movies and like these jokes that the MST3K guys are adding, and you can get together with these friends and discuss this bad movie.
Oh, so it's a, you know, it's a joint experience.
It's an event instead of sitting alone watching Netflix.
Sure, mm-hmm. sure.
The other movie that I saw, and yes, I went to see three movies this week, the other movie is The Martian.
Now, this is a movie that when I saw that you were going to see this movie,
mm-hmm.
I actually had designed my day to do it, and then I ran out of time.
You have to see The Martian.
So this will be seen, and hopefully we'll be able to talk about it a little more deeply next week, because I do want to see this film.
I was so excited about this. You know, this was our first book of the week when we started the show 65 weeks ago.
And we can find that in the notes.
And it's in the notes, and it's in the, you can go back into the archives and listen to how excited I was about this book a year and a half ago.
Uh-huh.
And I think I said the words, this is going to make a great movie.
Mm-hmm. Chip, what did you
this
say?
This made a great movie.
Yes, and you didn't say just a great movie. You said this is the best space movie?
This is the best use of space in a movie that I've ever seen. The technology that we have now, there was never a moment when I said, oh, wow, look at the special effects.
Okay.
I forgot that it was special effects. I was thinking, wow, why would they design the ship that way? That's what I was thinking, instead of, wow, how did they do that for a movie?
Okay, I've got a question for you, and because I haven't seen it. When you're in space, is it dead silence like Kubrick's?
Kubrick's design was much slower and deliberate in the way space moved. And in this Ridley Scott version, it is an action-packed motion kind of a movie, kind of like Gravity was last year.
Okay.
There is a silence moment, and I don't want to ruin it for anybody.
Okay, let's go with that. And it looks like it's going to be a great film. I mean,
is a great film.
It's a great film.
It is a great film. Chip, you have to go see it. We have to discuss it next week.
Beautiful.
Because we've only discussed it like 5 times. Next week, there's going to be a lot more movies. It's October, and it's...
We're starting to speed up. This is a good time to release films.
And the film that's being released next week that I'm excited about is the Steve Jobs movie. This is the Steve Jobs movie that Aaron Sorkin wrote. Danny Boyle is directing. It is based on the Walter Isaacson biography. Everyone has been anticipating this version of the Steve Jobs movie for a long time, and I will pay my money, like I do to Apple all the time, to watch more about Steve Jobs.
Well, he is one of the great icons of our lifetime, and there may be others that come through, but he really is. His use of design and the way he changed how we compute. You know, you could say Gates did the same thing. He brought it to the masses. You could say Google did the same thing.
And the focus of this movie is more on his presentation skills. It's all about how Steve Jobs was the P.T. Barnum, was the ability to stand on a stage and show us these things and make us excited. Okay. That's one thing that Bill Gates really hasn't done.
And we're going to discuss this a little bit later in our podcast, because we're going to talk a little bit about the Google event and how it compares to an Apple event.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Big difference. So I am excited to see that one. You found a movie called Victoria. Tell us about that one.
Victoria is a very interesting film, and the reason I put it in here is it's all filmed in one take.
Wow.
So it looks like it's a bank robbery.
Okay.
In one take. So this is going to be a very interesting film, because you're going to follow the things as they happen over a period of time. There's got to be a lot of skill to putting this together.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'll see it at the theater, but I look forward to seeing it eventually.
I wonder if it's a lot like Birdman, that was all one take, but not really one take.
I don't know. I don't know either.
That would be an interesting one. It's called Victoria. We'll look that one up. And you found a documentary about cars.
That's right. A Faster Horse. This is a documentary where they talk a little bit about the engineering and about the icon that is the Ford Mustang. One of the things the trailer started talking about was, you know, this muscle car and all this other stuff. Ford originally designed this Mustang. It was not a muscle car. It was a car for enjoyment. It had an underpower engine, and this is Iacocca was the person who led the group that put it together. It was put together with parts that Ford had for all the other cars, because they didn't think it was going to work. And because of its success, I mean, that's when they started bringing out these Shelbys and all the other fast technology that we kind of identified this car with. I will not catch this in a movie. I mean, at the movie theater, but I will catch it when it comes through. Any type of design, I mean, I guess if there was a story about the Camaro, or, you know, about the 2002 BMW or Porsche or something like that, they're interesting because they are the technology of the time.
Okay. I have no joy for cars. You can tell me all you want about cars. If you talk about sports in the same sentence, you will see my eyes glaze over. So I'm glad you're excited about it.
It's a good thing we're going to talk about motor racing in just a moment.
Right.
In your joy for NASCAR.
I'm sure that would be a great app of the week.
Maybe we'll just make a whole podcast designed for you like that.
I'm sure there's plenty of podcasts out there. I'm sure the car talk.
How about if it was stock car racing and wrestling at the same time?
Oh boy, this show is taking a turn. Brings us to our app of the week. And you know what, the one thing we haven't talked about very much since iOS 8, the iPhone, the iPad, they've had this ability to have different alternative keyboards, and we really haven't talked about that since it has become a thing. Do you use any alternative keyboards?
I do not.
Okay. I do.
Okay, and my kids do. I mean, if you look at their iPods and whatever they end up using, their iPhones and stuff, they use all the crazy keyboards.
There's all kinds of crazy keyboards, and one that came out this week was the Hotel Transylvania 2 keyboard, and I downloaded it because I had so much fun with this movie. I wanted that fun to extend to the rest of my day.
Well, it is October, and the icons that that would make it interesting.
And I did buy a box of Count Chocula. This is a fun keyboard. It's got little pictures from the movie, a lot of moving pictures. If you want to call them GIFs, then you're right. If you want to call them GIFs, then you're wrong. And you can...
I say GIFs.
Why would you do...
I have no idea. Don't ask me. I mispronounce stuff all the time.
You say giraffe. Okay. Not giraffe. I get it.
So on this, you get emojis. Mm-hmm. You get some scenes. And I guess you can put those as you're writing a text or something like that. You kind of sprinkle your stuff with this.
A picture is worth 1,000 words.
To make yourself look professional.
Well, no, this is certainly not professional. This is certainly for fun. But a picture is worth 1,000 words. If I can express my feelings using a smiley face instead of typing out the words, I am happy, then that's more fun. That's more interesting. It's communication between people. Mm-hmm. And this has all those pictures. All the fun parts of the movie are in there. And if you are discussing the movie with somebody or discussing something similar, you can express yourself with these pictures. And
that's
what I do with it. I do also have the Klingon keyboard, so if I'm typing something...
So if you really go off the deep end, you start sending somebody something in Klingon, and then the person responds in Klingon,
then
we know to run.
Then we know what's happening. It's great. I love the alternative keyboards.
There are conventions where people get together and they practice... I'm sorry, I'm assuming it's a Star Trek convention, mm-hmm. where they talk to each other in Klingon.
You know that Klingon is a real language.
It's an honest-to-goodness
language created by actual linguists. It was actually created for Star Trek, and it's a real language.
So you could take something that's written in Klingon, and then you could write it in Elvish. With Tolkien, and you're just like living the dream right there.
One of my favorite lines from one of the Star Trek movies was the Klingon who says that you haven't read Shakespeare until you've read it in its original Klingon. I love it. Keyboards are important. Keyboards are fun. There's a lot of things that we can do with the keyboards that people don't take advantage of. Saving certain phrases that you type all the time.
Really?
So that if you type in one or two letters of that phrase, it can come up automatically for you.
You can always come up affirmative.
So it can always say, good morning! I do have that one programmed in, by the way.
Can you send sounds?
With the new messaging system, iMessage, you can send a sound file. You can record your own voice or a picture or a video and send those through iMessage.
Oh, that would be interesting.
It is. It's a very interesting process. I don't really use the sound very often.
I could see that it could be very disturbing to someone, especially when you're thinking that most of the time when you are texting somebody, you're thinking of it as a quiet activity as opposed to a
voicemail or any other voice communication. Yep, that is the point. So I don't know. Get out there and look at those keyboards. The swipe keyboard is fun. I don't use it, but my wife really likes it.
Okay.
The Swift key is interesting. I don't use it, but I've seen people use all those alternative keyboards. Brings us to our Now the News, and it's October. Oh,
it's October.
Here we go. 40th anniversary of Rocky Horror Picture Show is coming up, and you found an article from The Atlantic that says that Rocky Horror Picture Show is a lot more normal now, 40 years later.
The article's name is It's Gone Mainstream.
Oh, boy, I wouldn't go that far.
Well, you know, last year or the year before, didn't Glee, they had a Rocky Horror Show?
Yes, they did. And I not only watched that episode of Glee, even though I wasn't a viewer of Glee, I bought the soundtrack for that episode of Glee.
Did you really?
Because you know how much I love the Rocky Horror Picture Show. This is a big part of my life growing up as a theater nerd. We sat and watched this movie all the time. We knew every word. We knew every step of the choreography. And to say that it's mainstream, I still have a problem with. Because the episode of Glee, that was what they came up with at the end, was maybe Rocky Horror Picture Show is special. Maybe it shouldn't be for everyone. Maybe it's something that we should keep secret for ourselves.
Well, I think that what ends up happening when we say it's going mainstream, although we're much more tolerant of people who are different than maybe the average Joe, I think that we've grown as a society on that, but it still is, you know, kind of out there. I mean, it's certainly showing at midnight, maybe at a theater. I don't think it's taking the place of, you know, at the 8 o'clock show and the 6 o'clock show. It was went on back on Broadway. Unfortunately, one of its opening nights, not maybe opening nights, but one of the first few weeks, it shut down at September 11th. I mean, it just had the unfortunate time of being in Broadway when that horrible event happened. So we lost that part of it. You know, transgender people are in the news. We're much more tolerant, I would say.
We are much more tolerant, and it's much more normal. And I still say the word normal there instead of the word mainstream.
Okay.
That's just me. What is becoming much more mainstream is streaming.
See streaming what I did there? Is. See I what see did that.
There? Mainstreaming.
Well, this is an article... basically about a company that's not based in the United States. So this is not for you and me, but if you were overseas and you wanted to watch NFL games or you wanted to watch some different soccer leagues or some of the other sporting events, there's a company out there that's created a Netflix for sporting events.
It's called the Perform Group, and they don't have a name for their app yet, but it will be launching in 2016. It's an over-the-top service, and it's going to allow exactly what you said, people in other countries access to those sporting events for about $10 a month.
Which is very reasonable. Mm-hmm. So, once again, this is not going to be available in the United States, but it's showing that there may be a service that will be available to the United States that may end up doing something similar.
Streaming is gaining traction. There's no doubt that there's more streaming now than there was 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. I don't have a DVR in my house. I don't have cable service in my house. I have Hulu.
How do you survive?
Because Hulu, for $12 a month, because I paid for the no commercials, the second they allowed me to pay for no commercials, sure. I gave them that money and smiled. I watch Hulu. That's all we watch. The kids don't think about what's on Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. By the way, it's the Muppets. They watch Hulu.
How interesting. I pay for cable, but I don't watch a lot of television. What can I say? But I guess my kids or my wife, they have things they enjoy.
The future is definitely in the streaming category. There's mm-hmm. no doubt that we are sure. moving toward that. And sports is the one holdout we've talked about lots of times. ESPN is available streaming through Sling TV mm-hmm. for $20 a month.
Things are happening. The future is coming.
Mm-hmm. And it's going to be expensive. All right. So we talked about the Steve Jobs movie. We talked about how Steve Jobs was a showman. He was a presenter. He was amazing on stage. Google had their event this week. And
did you get excited about the Google event?
You know, of course I got excited about the event. Of course I tuned in to watch the event live, and boy, did it leave me flat. Those guys who were giving that presentation were not trying to be the P.T. Barnum presentation style of Apple. They were showing us their wares, and their wares are lovely.
Okay.
But it just left me flat in that I was not excited about anything they presented. The first thing they showed us was the new Nexus phone, and there's two of them, and they're lovely. Thank you. Nice Nexus phones. And then they moved on to their Chromecast. They redesigned the Chromecast, and they introduced a new Chromecast audio for $35.
Sure, and the audio looks like it hooks right to your speakers, mm-hmm. and... what do you know? You can listen to... Well, not only can you listen to music, but you can listen to almost anything that you can stream.
Mm-hmm.
So
this becomes a competitor to the Sonos systems, where you can have one of these little $35 hockey pucks on every set of speakers in your whole house, and you can listen to whatever you want throughout mm-hmm. the house for a very low cost. One of the things that I found an article on Engadget is this Chromecast audio seems to be the first step in a really long game of Google being integrated into your smart home.
Explain that to me, because as we were preparing for this, we had a pretty interesting conversation.
This article shows how these little devices on all of your TVs and speakers throughout your home could be integrated together to become kind of like the computer on Star Trek, where you are just in a room and you say the words computer, okay, and the computer activates, hears you, and does what you're wanting to do. Kind of like Alexa.
So, well, it reminds me of, you know, the new Apple TV coming out, and Siri is going to be part of it.
Mm-hmm.
It reminds me of Amazon's Echo,
mm-hmm,
where you go, Alexa, order me some new diapers or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm. And that is what all of these companies are getting to. In the long term, they want to be integrated into your home. They, mm-hmm, want you to think of your experience as their company, as their advertising, to get you what you want.
And you, there may be times where you don't want this in every room. So, I was thinking in your house, maybe in the kitchen, maybe in your den where you watch the television. And there may be areas of your home that you want to be more private. Maybe your bedroom would be more private. Maybe the restroom would be more private. I don't know. It's up to you. But for $35 a room, you can have one of these available. And once again, it could do some amazing things for you.
Yeah. Integration and context. We've talked a lot about context on this show, how everything being integrated, being able to communicate with everything else is the future of technology. To that end, Google has given us these new Nexus phones, and you found an article on The Verge that is looking at how they're sharing ads on these phones.
Well, if we think about how Amazon's system kind of works, it's all designed to get you to Amazon. Your Kindle or your something like that wants to get you to work in the Amazon universe. Well, we don't necessarily, we haven't always thought about Android's design to get you into the Google universe. You're using the Google services, that's where the ads are coming from, and that's the most profitable part for Google as far as their company is concerned. So it looks like these new phones are doing that maybe better?
Gateways into that whole Google universe. I use the Google ecosystem a lot. I am a very big user of all the things Google.
Mm-hmm. Well, I end up using, I have an Apple phone, and I have a MacBook, but I use the Google Chrome as far as the web browser. I use the Google app. In fact, in many ways, I prefer that.
Mm-hmm.
To me, I'm trying to take the best of both worlds.
I agree. I do work in a lot of different ecosystems, but I use the Google one, I think, the most.
Okay.
I do use the Amazon ecosystem, though. Amazon wants you to use their ecosystem more, and to show that, they have banned the sale of both Apple TVs and Google Chromecasts on Amazon.
Well, for their company to sell them.
Right.
So it could be a third party that comes in and sells them. This is very interesting, for this has happened in the past. Target and Meijer used to sell Kindles. They at some point recognized that the Kindle Fire was designed to get you shopping through Amazon. And so they basically discontinued those sales through their stores. Well, Amazon's just different. I don't know this is a good idea. And I don't think that they really want to have somebody like Apple and Google turning on them. Where Kindle sells a lot of books, and the iBooks app and Google Play, I guess they're where you get your books,
mm-hmm,
certainly is not anywhere on the level of the Kindle app. And the Kindle app is, in many ways, far ahead of where the other services are.
And don't forget your other favorite, Comixology, which is owned by Amazon as well.
Yeah, wait until these companies basically, okay, you want to play that, and they start creating their own apps, and they just start squeezing you out.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think this is a good place for Amazon to play.
I am a big fan of the Amazon ecosystem as well. Obviously, mm-hmm, Amazon is a big supporter of this show, so you can go to amazon.toomuchscrolling.com and do any of your shopping and support the show. But yeah, this might not be a good business move for them.
It just seems short-sighted.
A Yale professor has looked at the future of the internet, and he sees that the internet is going to be more of a flow than it is today.
The professor starts out by saying, forget the clunky web. And where the old web was sort of designed around space, like having all this information in there, what we're really talking about is the internet moving to very useful information, personalized information for you. Very similar to like the Google app and you pick it up, you turn it on, and then you can kind of flick it up, and you know, you just happen to be looking at what time does the Chicago Bears game start. Well, it kind of shows you what the Chicago Bears game start, maybe some Chicago Bears information. You just made a payment on your car note, and all of a sudden there's a refi ad that's talking about that, or maybe strategies to pay off your car sooner. You were searching because you were looking for a new computer. Maybe computer ads come up, or maybe there are articles on things to look at when you're looking for a new computer. It's about creating personalized information from a warehouse of information that's really hard to get to and really hard to get to you in a personal way.
And that's what we've been talking about for a few years now, is the idea of context. That's mm-hmm. the buzzword, is you have this information and you need more information. You might not know what information you need, but these algorithms could possibly give you the right information. It's not quite working yet. The one thing that bothers me about your analogy
sure.
is I see a lot of ads for things that I just bought.
Well, if you're on the web, you're on the Chrome and you're looking at Gmail, the ads that kind of pop up at the top, they can be really random at times.
It seems like they're always advertising to me the thing that I just bought. Like, I know that. Tell me something different. That's where this flow comes in. That is the
it's
context.
Like going to the grocery store and you're buying toothpaste, and then you get a coupon for
toothpaste
that expires in a week.
Right.
Well,
I just bought toothpaste. I clearly don't need toothpaste next week.
Where that would be helpful is that you go to the grocery store 6 weeks from now, and all of a sudden there's a coupon saying, oh,
6 weeks ago you bought toothpaste. You might need it again. Oh,
sure.
Good idea, coupon. Thank you.
That's right.
Yeah, that's the context. That's where the internet can really shine. One of the things that we have to be very careful about in the future is hacking. And researchers say they have designed an unhackable fiber network. You found this article on Vice.com.
Well, I think underneath it says, yeah, we'll see.
Right. Because there is no such thing as absolutes when it comes to hacking. This is talking about quantum cryptology. The idea of quantum computing is this gigantic idea that we can make these encrypted files so encrypted that they can't possibly be broken except for by a quantum computer. But the bad part is, if the good guys have a quantum computer, the bad guys can get one too.
And in fact, I think you just hit upon it. There's a real desire, if you're a bank or a company that works with sensitive information, or a government that works with sensitive information, to be able to find secure ways to transfer from one place to another. In fact, there was an article this week about the Department of Defense, U.S., using the internet and how that may be a bad idea.
Sure.
But anyway, the goal here is trying to create more secure ways of dealing with your sensitive information. We'll see what happens. It's always nice to see that technology is creating something, but as smart as we like to think we are, well, we have to recognize that other people can be just as smart or more clever.
Yeah, when we get to things like self-driving cars, encryption and security have to be priorities.
Sure.
If we are talking about literally our physical safety, we need to make sure that there's no bad guys who are going to hack into those computing systems.
Until you need it, like, right then, and you can't remember your password or something.
And then you
what
need
do you mean you can't override this?
Yeah. The future of coding is here, and it's all about APIs. It's all about the different structures.
Tell me, what is an API?
An API is an application program interface.
Okay.
This is the structure that we put in place for a program to run on any other system.
All right, so to put this in context, I used to work with a bunch of banks, and they buy banks, they do whatever they end up doing, and they take systems and they have to have them talk to the next system.
Because in the beginning of programming, you were programming alone in the dark in a closet.
Mm-hmm.
You said, I want to make a program that does A, B, and C.
And then you'd have to go and you'd find, you know, John Smith is an expert on this mm-hmm. system. John, how do you do this? And John can do it, but, you know.
This is system integration. This
okay.
is having those systems communicate. In the banking industry, that's a problem. In the hospital industry, that's a huge problem.
Sure. Government.
In education, we have so many different
Didn't you
systems.
Say 12 or 13?
We have so many different systems. I don't even know anymore.
Okay.
And having the ability for those systems to communicate through a single list of how these things are going to work, that's an API. That's the future.
So it basically is taking the design of the program in making it so it's much more plug and play versus everyone having their own special language.
All of the gas tanks in all of the cars have the same opening to put the fuel into the gas tank.
Okay. Well, on some level, you could see maybe it could stifle some innovation, but on another level, you know, it could be like Legos that kind of all fit together.
That's right. And the more those systems fit together, the more we can get done. Because I get so frustrated sometimes when a student wants to do one thing and cannot move that information from that one system to the other. Copying and pasting is one thing.
Well, I'm noticing with newspaper sites recently that some of them are becoming much more difficult to be able to link. You know, they're trying to do things to kind of, I don't know, prevent you from stealing their information.
Because they want to be paid for their work, yeah. Okay. That's a thing. There's no doubt about that. APIs are good. They can stifle innovation. You are right. They do give a programmer a list of things that your program must do. Mm-hmm. They're kind of like government programs.
Well, it can make programs larger. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the other thing is nothing prevents you from moving outside the system. If a better system is created, then it becomes the new standard.
Yeah, if you want to play in the sandbox with all the other kids, you have to do these certain things mm-hmm. for the rule of your program. If you don't want to, fine. But you're going to be mm-hmm. alone.
Sure.
That's how that works. Speaking of how things work, we got new credit cards this week, Chip.
Or debit cards. Yes. And in fact, on October 1st, what we ended up starting was the new chips in your card.
Right. We're going to a chip and sign first. We're not going to the chip and pin system that the rest of the world uses. We're going to that in 2017.
All right. So let's make sure. You head it over to the grocery store. You're buying your groceries. You pull out your debit card. You swipe it through that little magnetic strip, mm-hmm. which was designed maybe back in the 60s?
Yep.
All right. And that is something that is not as secure.
It's just reading those numbers. It's just a raw file that is those numbers off of the front of the card. That's all it is.
Okay. And the reason why your grocery store or the place you bought this from is going to want you to use this is because previous under the Magstrip way, the banks would take the liability if there was fraud. Okay. But that has flipped around. They're basically said, if you're using the magnet strip, the merchant is taking on that liability.
Because we saw so many companies get stung by that.
Target,
Home Depot.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so what's happening is we have these, what do we call it, dipping?
Yes. The process is instead of swiping, you're going to dip the card. You're going to put the chip into the reader, and it's going to stay in that reader until the transaction is complete. The good part about this is that it's not sending the card number off of the front okay. of the card. It's a random code, kind of like the Apple Pay system.
A unique code mm-hmm. for your purchase.
For each transaction.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. So this is very interesting, and it should be widely adopted. And if you haven't started receiving your replacement cards, you will.
Yeah. They were supposed to be out by October 1st, but that was not a hard and fast rule.
Okay.
So I've seen quite a few of my cards come in, but a few of them are still on the way. And again, we are going to get to the next level of security where you're going to actually have to enter a PIN mm-hmm. instead of signing the piece of paper, and that's going to happen between now and 2017. The other innovation in cards lately has been something called RFID, radio frequency identification, and we can have little transistors on all of our stuff, our shirts and our phones and everything else, broadcasting our identifying messages.
Oh, how what could be the problem with that?
Oh, yeah, it could be a problem, couldn't it?
Well, you're as private as you want to be, as long as we know where you are.
Right. Yeah, there's great uses for the RFID where we could know where things are. We can use it to find our keys,
sure.
for instance. But yeah, if your wallet is full of, say, your driver's license has an RFID and your passport has an RFID, you are kind of a big bubble of information, and the bad guys just need to get a sniffer and go near you and catch that information as it's flying off of you.
Well, in fact, this is saying that California Governor Jerry Brown, the reason why we always have to follow California is they're so big. It is such a large, large state that many of the mandates that California does, they would get rifled down through all the other states. Mm-hmm. But Jerry Brown has a bill that he can veto or he can sign that basically looks at these RFIDs, these radio frequency chips, whether they can be put into your driver's license or not. And if they are, I mean, you're not private. The ACLU has basically said this is an issue. Cato Institute has said this is an issue. I can understand how this could be a total issue. Mm-hmm. How can you, if you choose to be private, truly be private? I mean, you walk around with a cell phone. You're as anonymous as you want to be.
Right.
So.
Yeah, they've already done this with passports. So if you're walking around with your passport, you've already got an RFID that the bad guys could sense who you are based on that information.
Oh, wow. Talk about you not being able to be truly private. My assumption is there's going to be something. There's going to be a wallet or something. You'll put these things in that will just cut everything
there's
off.
There's lots of those already. Lots of people have created those already. And yes, privacy is a question. Do we have privacy? Do we want privacy?
And going back to the issues, you've lost your wallet and you're trying to find it and you're going, well, I got these radio frequencies. Well, I just bought this thing to block all those. Oh.
You found another story about chips. It must be a chip kind of week, Chip.
It is a chip kind of week.
You found another one. This one, they're trying to work on light-based memory chips. This is a great, interesting idea about how we can store information on a chip, like we have right now with the uh-huh. solid-state drives. This is light-based.
This is light-based. And tell me about the challenge with that, Mr. Fodor.
Well, the challenge of gathering light is you can't put it in a jar.
Put light in a jar?
If it's a nice sunny day and you take a jar and grab that sunlight and put the lid on it real tight, you're not going to have light when you get back in the house.
So you can't, like, absorb the light and then take it where you wanted to go and use it there?
We've discovered that we can use light to move data. Fiber optic cable is moving data via light,
uh-huh.
and that works really well, but we can't store it. These chips is a great idea.
So you're really talking about the challenge of storing light.
This is a real challenge. It's a great idea, but what they have found is through this process, and it's in the show notes, you can read the whole article, what they found is through this process, you have to retain electricity to keep this data on these chips.
So where I'm thinking this could be very interesting, if you have sensitive data that you need for that moment and you need a secure connection, I'm assuming it's secure, mm-hmm. That as long as you have that electricity running through it, that becomes secure, mm-hmm. and that information gets broadcast. But you could pull a plug and all of a sudden that information goes away.
Right.
Immediately, mm-hmm. because there's no electricity.
Because
there.
It's just light.
Oh, how interesting.
Yeah, we have so many interesting innovations that are coming up. It really brings us into a discussion about Moore's Law.
Yes, tell me about Moore's Law.
Well, Moore's Law, the idea is that every 2 years, we're going to double the number of transistors available on our microchips. We're going to essentially double the speed of computing every 2 years.
Okay.
And Moore's Law might be slowing down as we get to silicon's threshold.
Silicon is sand.
Silicon is made from sand.
And that's what the chips are made out of.
Mm-hmm.
And we have followed Moore's Law for a long time. Mm-hmm. And we may be at the end as far as what we can produce as far as storage, mm-hmm. and speed and things of that nature.
Yeah, we're getting to that point where we've reached that end point on silicon. So I found a very interesting article on Engadget that IBM is looking into carbon nanotube transistors, that maybe we can find a new way to do this.
So Moore's Law may be slowing down for the sand-based silicon.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but it may absolutely we may have a new technology that may just escalate us to another level.
Yeah, carbon nanotubes. If you've watched any of the videos of them creating carbon nanotubes, if you've seen any of the research, the possibilities are endless with carbon nanotubes.
And for anybody whose mind is spinning because they're going, I don't even know what they're talking about, things are getting better. And they're going to continue to get better?
And cheaper.
All right. There we go.
Better and cheaper. Faster and cheaper. That should be your show title. The future is full of possibilities, and Bing is getting really good at predicting the future, especially when it comes to things like NFL games.
Well, this was an interesting little insight that what the Microsoft people are doing, or the Bing people are doing, is they're using statistical models, which are things that we use every day to help us make better decisions. But then they're following through on what your feelings are, or what how you're responding to whether the Bears are going to win this week or whether the Cowboys are going to win this week.
The Bears are not going to win this week.
It's going to be a tough year for the Bears.
Yes, it is.
But our point is that it's not just one layer of predictability using statistical models. It's also taking all that information, all that anonymous information, and then trying to make it useful, trying to predict the outcome of something. They've been very, very good at it. I don't know how long this goodness will last, but so far it's been very insightful, and the article is very interesting. I recommend it.
Yeah, go to our show notes and read that article. Read all those articles. We find so many fun things. Chip is usually the one who finds a lot of these articles, and we find so many interesting things that we can go on for hours on these.
Sure, sure. Every day we read something.
Let's not go on for hours, though. Let's end the show. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think,
Chip? Does that mean we can come back next week?
I think we can come back next week. It's October. We can start watching some of those scary movies, some of those classic horror movies.
I think we're going to have some interesting things to talk about.
I think we have some interesting guests lined up, too.
Oh, yes.
There's your big teaser. If you need more information, you can give us a call. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. You can go to our website, TooMuchScrolling.com. Send us an email, TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, and every day of the week you can go to our news site, news.toomuchscrolling.com, find out all the information that you need to survive another day. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Chip Hessenflug.
We'll see you in the future. I just want to think about things that we don't talk about. What I want to talk about.